Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, who's news director for American Family News and One News Now. And also Steve Jordahl, who is reporter and news anchor for the aforementioned American Family News. Good morning slash good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good morning slash good afternoon to you as well.
We'd have some listeners on the Eastern and Eastern time zone. So they get, you know, they get a little offended, a little touchy there when you say good morning, and they've reached the afternoon time of the day.
So. I know. We don't want to offend anybody.
You know how those Easterners are.
It's a safe space here.
It's a safe space here, yeah. It's a safe space, all right. All right, well, we are have you in to tell us what's next on the news front.
Let me just, as long as I have my phone open here this morning, President Trump tweeted out, "The Supreme Court is one of the main reasons I got elected president. I hope Republican voters and others are watching and studying the Democrats' playbook." Is that a little veiled threat that maybe we're going to start playing by the playbook of the Democrats? Because so far, we haven't. I think, as you guys mentioned before, for every Democrat president that has nominated a Supreme Court, they've got a pretty fair hearing and an up and down vote pretty quickly without any of these games.
Yeah. I think I would read into that President Trump believes the American people are catching on to something. I think this Kavanaugh case and with Christine Ford, I think Christine Ford incident is blowing up in the Democrats' face.
You do?
I think it's blowing up in their face. And as evidence of that, I see the change in attitude this morning of Republican Senators Flake and Corker.
Neither of whom are big fans of President Trump. They can't stand him.
They can't stand
him.
So
if they wanted an opportunity to stick it to the man, so to speak, this would be it.
It sounded just a few days ago like they were on the Democrat team, Democratic Party team, when it came to, now let's have a listen and all of this sort of thing. But this morning they're saying, and in case you haven't heard yet, folks, Christine Ford, through her lawyers, are now saying, no, we don't want to show up at the hearing on Monday. We think there should be a full-fledged FBI investigation. And that's being dismissed by various quarters. It's not going to happen. So and then we're learning through Senator Graham of South Carolina, who sits on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's asking the question, if Christine Ford back in July said, I don't want this incident made public. She said that apparently to Senator Dianne Feinstein. I don't want this made public at all. Senator Graham is saying, okay, if she didn't want it made public, why at that point did she take a polygraph test and lawyer up and hire lawyers?
Right.
This doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up if you're telling Dianne Feinstein, don't mention this to anybody. I don't want it made public. But at the same time, you're doing polygraph tests. Somebody paid for a polygraph test, and you're getting lawyers.
You're preparing for a public
disclosure.
Deal.
Yeah, disclosure of your accusation.
Right.
That is what I think Senator Graham is saying. So I think this is not going well for the Democrats amongst, I think, normal thinking Americans. This sounds like a gang up based on an allegation. I think Christine Ford is having trouble finding credibility with her allegation. She can't, she says it happened, but she can't remember where it happened back there 36 years ago.
Exactly.
Reasonable people are asking, this happened 36 years ago. Just now you decide to come forward with this. There is also the knowledge that Christine Ford is a Democratic Party activist.
Right.
Her lawyer, Ms. Katz, is a Democratic Party activist. And I think I read somewhere this morning where Christine Ford's brother has either contributed to or worked with Planned Parenthood. So
there's the pro-abortion.
Pro-abortion angle. Side of things. So we're getting all of this information's coming out. She has decided she's not going to show up. Remember the Republicans said, we want to listen to you.
Right.
We're going to. In fact, they delayed the vote, which was supposed to happen tomorrow. We'll delay that. We'll have this special open session on Monday so everybody can ask you questions. We can hear your story. The American people will see it on television. There you go. There's your platform.
And Steve, I think the Democrats, and it seems clearly that this is a political strategy aimed at torpedoing the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. I think the Democrats might have gotten a little bit further with this if they had not started out the hearings last week right out of the gate. As soon as Senator Grassley started the hearings, they immediately delayed and interrupted him against the rules of the Senate for 75 minutes.
It's been a circus from the very beginning.
Right.
And it's so obvious. I just have one question to throw out. We can go on to other things if you want, but can you imagine what will happen if for some reason they have to replace, say, for example, Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Do they have any ammunition left to fire? I mean, this seems like about as bad as it can get, but I don't know. But this is just for replacing a kind of a more right-center justice.
Well, and you know that President Trump is not going to be like George Bush, who tried to nominate a moderate, Garland, at one point during his administration. You know, Donald Trump, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg retires or passes away or whatever, she's not a young person, you know Donald Trump is going to nominate a conservative to replace
That's the point of an election.
Ideologue. I think the circus last week was the Democrats letting the Republicans know.
Shot across the bow.
Next fight is going to be Armageddon. We're just letting you know this is a taste of it.
Maybe. I don't know where else they can go. I'm just saying.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Hey, the Department of Justice, you know that President Trump has demanded the immediate declassification of several documents. Specifically, they want the full release of all text messages the president wants, concerning the Russia probe by Justice Department official Bruce Orr. He wants all of the former officials who were fired, James Comey and Deputy McCabe. He wants to look into all of this whole thing. He wants to declassify all these documents. There is now a process that they're going through in Washington to try to figure out if there's anything that should be remain classified in here. The president wants it unredacted, and he goes
now
on.
Explain what that means.
When you see the news that they get documents from the FBI or these intelligence committees, and you see these big black paragraphs that are blacked out.
Right.
Those are redactions. That's something that somebody has determined is classified information and cannot be put out into the public. What they have found, of course, when they've looked at some of these that have been unredacted afterwards, you find out what's underneath the black mask. It really, in the case of this investigation into President Trump and Russia and the collusion and everything, has always been stuff that the Democrats don't want out there because it makes them look bad, but nothing that is a national security concern, not revealing methods, not revealing names of spies.
It's embarrassing. So that's why they initially redacted it. President Trump says, I've seen this. My staff has seen this. There's nothing national security related here. You just don't want to be embarrassed for politicizing the FBI, et cetera, et cetera.
So when the president issues an order, it triggers a declassification review process. It's conducted by various agencies within the intelligence community, in conjunction with the White House counsel, and they want to make sure that America's national interests are secured. It goes through the FBI. It goes through the Director of National Intelligence, and then the White House lawyers get together. Then they present it to the president, and they say, here's what we can release and here's what we can't. Now, here's the caveat is the president can declassify anything he wants at any time he wants immediately. He can say, nope. So he can see exactly what's under those blackouts, and I guess he can determine, you know, you're just trying to cover yourselves, you're just trying to not embarrass yourselves. This is not national security. Out with the blackout, you know. Let's have the American public see it. But if there's any redaction in there, it's going to be an argument. It's going to be another Armageddon. And what I find specifically interesting is the reaction of the Democrats and the media, who the Democrats say that bringing these documents forward As Adam Schiff said, President Trump, in a clear abuse of power, has decided to intervene in a pending law enforcement investigation by ordering selective release of materials, et cetera, et cetera. And the media, Fred, you've been in reporting a long time. Have you ever seen the media say no to unredacted documents, to more information?
Well, normally it works the other way. The media goes to court to demand the release of documents.
Right.
They think, no, we can't have government hiding secrets from the American public. Now you have President Donald Trump acting like a reporter, an investigative reporter, saying, no, I think the American public should know.
Listen, the media will publish classified information if
right.
it's leaked to them.
Yes.
And have done so.
Uh-huh.
And so because the public has a right to know.
Yes.
So if they will publish leaked classified information, what possible problem could they have with the president who has the authority? It's not an abuse of power. The president who has the authority to release information and remove the redaction, why would they suddenly have a problem with it? Because it's embarrassing to the party they serve, the Democratic Party.
Here's my opinion. The real collusion that's going on here is between people in the Justice Department and the media.
I think that's a fair assessment.
They are colluding. I think these pieces of documents that the president wants released will likely prove his stated concerns over the Mueller investigation, that you had a politicized, under Barack Obama, in the dying days of his government, Barack Obama weaponized the Justice Department, he weaponized the FBI to try to, number one, they were trying to keep Donald Trump from being elected.
Right.
Number two, when it became clear he was elected, to try to discredit the Trump administration. I think we all know about Peter Strzok now and his emails with girlfriend Lisa Page, these FBI agents.
Very influential in the FBI, by the way, Peter
That's
Strzok.
Right. Remember Peter Strzok talking about Plan B. I'm paraphrasing here.
Insurance
policies. Talking with Andy, who is Andrew McCabe, the then former FBI director. One of the things that the president wants released is some of the documentation of conversations or requests being made by then FBI Director James Comey, mm-hmm. who, no secret here, the president is deeply suspicious of James Comey's political leanings.
Right.
With regards to, I think James Comey, it was his wife, Andrew McCabe, was Democrat.
Yeah, I've
his wife, McCabe's, no, it's Bruce Orr's wife that works for
Fusion GPS. But I think McCabe's wife was she running for office in Virginia?
Yes, it was McCabe.
And got
some political donations.
Yeah. So I think the president, what he wants, okay, let's let the American public judge for themselves. Instead of everything being filtered through the media, let the American public see what was being said.
I mean, why shouldn't this information about James Comey, for example, be released? He had a book released in the spring.
Yeah.
I mean, he got to tell his side of the story.
That's
and the
right.
president's sitting here going, yeah, I think there's other stuff that you didn't include in your book that we want to make sure the American people know.
You know, Fred, you talked about collusion between the media and the Justice Department, and I think that goes back. What I think you're going to find if these documents come out is, and this is how sneaky it gets, the Justice Department, the FBI, Strzok and McCabe et al., got the Steele dossier and knew that it was bunk. It was nothing but a bunch of lies.
Paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign. And they knew they couldn't go to a FISA judge with it. So what did they do? They sent James Comey in to brief the president on the dossier. James Comey came in and he said, Mr. President, there's this dossier and it has all kinds of crude stuff that we can't talk about on the radio about you. And he talked about that kind of stuff. But he didn't talk about the source with the president or any of the legal stuff. And then the FBI leaks to the media that Trump had been briefed on this dossier. So the media starts picking up on it, and the media reports on the dossier. They find the contents through WikiLeaks and all that kind of stuff, and we start seeing these allegations and everything, and then they use that to go to the FISA court and say, look, here's a reporter over here who's saying there's something with this dossier. Here's a reporter over here. It was all set up and leaked purposefully.
It's
an echo chamber.
To me, that's like the mob laundering money.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You don't want the sources of the money to be known. So you send it to this fake corporation and this fake corporation, and then it comes out, quote unquote, clean. And that's what happened with this dossier when they went to the FISA court. And let me tell you something. I think there's some serious illegalities. Whether or not the Justice Department goes after the people who did this, their intent appears to have been to deceive the FISA court.
Yes.
And to deceive the judge. I'm assuming that's illegal. Everything's illegal nowadays. I'm assuming that's illegal.
I would think it would have to be. Mm-hmm. Let me bring up something that Hillary Clinton was on TV the other night. She still continues to be here. She was on with Rachel Maddow, and this is the extent to which the Trump delusion syndrome derangement syndrome has kind of infected this country. I wanted to play a little bit of what she said with Rachel Maddow with regard to, they were talking about the release of this, that op-ed in the New York Times by that anonymous person that says they're stealing stuff off the president's desk and trying to, you know, keep him in check. This is what she had to say.
What I worry about, Rachel, is that after this election, this president's going to wholesale fire people. That's my prediction for tonight. And if we don't have one or both houses of Congress in place, he will be even more uncontrollable and unaccountable. He will fire people in the White House. He will fire people in his administration who he thinks are crossing him, questioning him, undermining him. So the president is close to being uncontrollable.
If someone was undermining the president, shouldn't he be fired?
That is bizarre. I'll tell you what's so bizarre about this. I know we talked about a story meeting. You have a problem with her using the term uncontrollable. I'll let you guys make that case. But the fact is, the New York Times editorial from this anonymous source did confess that there are people within the Trump administration who are actively working against him. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't he fire him?
Yeah.
That's a bizarre argument to me.
And it's interesting, the choice of words, because I think when you first read the president is close to being uncontrollable, I think what you first think is she must have meant out of control. The president's out of control. But being out of control is completely different than being uncontrollable. The Democrats feel that there has to be somebody in there controlling the president. Now, if she were president, would she stand for someone controlling her, pulling stuff off her desk, just because she doesn't believe in the same priorities that the president has? I mean,
she'd bring back the guillotine.
Oh, it would be all over. And as much control as that woman seems to want to have over her personal political life, I mean, the bathroom.
Yes, exactly.
Because she didn't trust it at the State Department.
That's a bizarre argument to make in light of this New York Times anonymous op-ed. I mean, what she should have said, if she was not a partisan ideologue, what she should have said is, I don't care if I disagree with Donald Trump. I don't like the man, but we cannot have presidencies being from within, being hindered and acted against but in a way that's almost treasonous. That's what she should have said if she cared at all about the institution of the presidency.
Yeah, but she felt comfortable saying that with Rachel Maddow there.
Oh, sure.
I think if she had said that to
Tucker,
Hannity or Tucker on Fox, Tucker would have said, wait a minute, Mrs. Clinton, if you were president and somebody wrote in Breitbart, an anonymous editorial that they were stealing stuff off of your desk, you're the president of the United States, would you try to find out who that person was?
And would you fire him?
That's what I would have asked her.
Yes.
Come on.
The second question being, and who controls you? If the president needs to be controlled, who do you want controlling you?
Yeah. No, that's what she should have said if she honestly cared about the institution of the presidency. That's what she should have said. This is a dangerous precedent, what's going on inside the Trump White House. I hope he fails politically, but this is wrong what these people are doing, this network of people. I'd fire him, too. Oh. That's what she should have said.
And well, they should be fired.
Yes.
Let's. I want to lighten things up as we come to a close
oh,
here,
good,
if you don't
please.
Mind.
Help me.
Although, I don't know, for people in Berkeley, this might not be good news. The city council there just passed a resolution requiring vegan food to be served at city events and meetings once a week. They're going to have vegan Mondays. So if you are a city councilor and you are going out to lunch or having a lunch with somebody catered in, it's going to be vegan. Now, it might not be bad, the worst thing in the world. I can take a vegetarian or vegan meal once a week. It's not the end of the world, but I mean, it is, you know, like...
It's the end of my world, Steve.
Hey, listen, if I was a department head, I'd start holding my meetings on Tuesday.
Yes.
You're going to have vegan Mondays, I'll meet Tuesday.
This is a requirement. You got it. You got to do it.
The city council passed the resolution for city events.
So it's Berkeley. This is Berkeley, right?
It's Berkeley,
yeah. So this is what I say about that. If you live in Berkeley, you get what you deserve, okay? That's what I say because listen, in all honesty, that's a first world problem.
Sure.
We all have access. If you have access to food, it probably doesn't matter if it's vegan or, you know, meaty, but you get what you deserve if you're living in Berkeley. All
indeed.
Right, what else?
All right, do you own a dog, Ed?
I don't own a dog. My wife owns dogs. Plural.
Well, if you wanted to get, you know how kids sometimes they beg their dad for a puppy? Well, Sony is coming out with a puppy. It's called Aibo, and it's a AI, or artificial intelligent puppy, that learns you and develops these personality traits and everything. It costs $2,900, and people are going to say, that's a lot of money for a dog. If you're looking for justification to spend that much money on a dog, according to the American Kennel Club, they say the average lifetime cost of a dog is $23,410.
Now, we had a discussion about this in our story meeting.
Yeah.
I can't believe that number. Because, first of all, the number of dogs we have now and the number of dogs we've had over the 37 years that my wife and I have been married, I just don't have that kind of money. I just can't believe that kind of money has gone through my fingers. But I will say this. For $2,900, if I could get rid of all my dogs and just have a fake dog that watches hockey with me and
there you
football,
go.
I might
maybe,
go for that.
Maybe go for it. So this author of this article gives the pros and cons. I mean, it's cute and everybody fell for it, she says. Although it's not quite the same as having a real dog. It doesn't give you real lick kisses, you know, like a puppy kisses. Everybody loves puppy kisses. But it does do things like if you tell it bang, bang, it'll fall over and play dead. It bring me the bone and it'll go find its special toy and it'll bring it to you. It you rub it behind the ear or under the chin and it kind of leans in and everything.
Well,
so
what happens if you kick it?
Oh, I don't know. It has the ability to look chagrined if you scold it.
Chagrined.
If you scold it, yes.
Folks, please do not email me. I have never in 37 years kicked a dog. I've hollered at them before. Okay, I've told them to shut up, especially when we've had yappy ones.
Yeah, a lot of Falcons might be looking for quarterbacks.
You put a fork down on the table and it starts barking because it thinks someone's at the door. I've never kicked a dog, so I'm just a little kicking dog humor. I assume most of you can laugh about that. All right, folks, we're done today on today's issues. More great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. And Lord willing, we'll join you again and hopefully you'll join us tomorrow for another edition of Today's Issues.